Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to this episode of Scrappy ABM. This episode is going to be a little bit different. It's actually just a re-release from another podcast that I was on. We love the content, wanted to make sure you got it. If you like this content, we actually dropped the show just in the show notes below, so you can go check out all of their content. But for now, I hope you enjoy this episode of Scrappy ABM.
Mason, before I ramble for too long, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, what you're up to at Scrappy in your own words.
Yeah, first and foremost, always thankful for the opportunity to talk not in person in our hometown, other than the one time we went to the local Thai jazz bar restaurant, which is still one of my favorite restaurants of all time. Anyway.
He didn't misspeak, folks. That is a Thai and jazz restaurant. It's a Venn diagram that is only appropriate here in Indy.
Which is amazing. Anyway, so what do we do? So we build ABM programs, but in a way that is somewhat scrappy. So I talk a lot about this, but if you look up ABM, you'll see a bunch of things around by all these different tools and technologies, and they're not bad. It's just not the right order of priorities. So I think you should build an ABM program with what you've got today. The reasons ABM programs fail typically aren't tooling and technologies, typically like internal alignment and like buy-in and the right resourcing from a people perspective. So if you can nail that first, then when you go buy technology, it'll help you scale it. So essentially, that's what we do, is build it with your current people and processes so that you can actually effectively implement ABM and then scale it. So hopefully that's helpful. That's clear as mud.
Yeah, and you do great work. We've got a lot of friends of yours that are customers, and they all sing your praises. I've been fortunate to see you present at several of those events we've crossed paths at. Big fan of the work and kind of you sharing what you know with everybody you know. So excited to dig into all of that today. Mason, it is the content cocktail hour, though. So before we do that, we always ask all of our guests, what are you enjoying drinking nowadays?
We're so boring. So we've got a 19-month-old, and then we've got another on the way. And, like, I'd be really sad to drink alone with my wife at these events where Jonathan and I hang out. I typically do an old-fashioned, but right now it's, like, our local grocery store brand coffee and water. And then I have a protein smoothie for lunch every day. So that's what I'm drinking. And that's it.
Impressive. I like it. So our house drinks a lot of coffee as well. For the amount of coffee we do drink, you would think we are coffee snobs, but we are not. We get the like Dunkin', the like 45-ounce like Dunkin', like huge thing. And we drink way too much of it.
Have you explored Frederick's coffee?
I have not.
It sounds fancy. It's just the Meyer brand coffee that's nice.
Okay.
And it's very good.
All right. I'll have to check that out.
There you go.
And I like that you said Meyer, not Myers, as we like to call it here in the Midwest occasionally. Add the apostrophe S to everything. Kroger's, Myers, etc. All right. Let's talk ABM. I've shared this story previously with a few folks. I don't think with you, though, specifically. I started my career in B2B SaaS marketing, led a marketing team. I then jumped out of the B2B world, started another business in the B2C world. That was like 2014 to call it like 2018. Then I jumped back into B2B SaaS and was leading a marketing team. I inherited a marketing team. And I'll never forget, like the first two or three weeks there, everybody was talking about ABM, ABM, ABM. And I was like, I don't know what the hell that is. It was like the 4 or 5 years that I had missed in software was like the rise of ABM. And I was like, so finally there's a colleague on the team, and I remember sitting down with her and I was ignorant enough to ask and vulnerable enough to ask, hey, what's this ABM stuff the entire team is talking about that I have no clue what it means? And she explained account-based marketing and she explained it to me. And now looking back, I realized that business was really just referring to a gifting campaign or a gifting program. But I remember as she explained it to me, I was kind of like, I don't know. To me, it just sounded like good marketing. Like it didn't sound like anything like revolutionary. But I think as you mentioned, we have a lot of what people were talking about in the kind of the rise of ABM was revolving around these technologies and tooling that was coming to life, and that they weren't inexpensive either. So the name of your business is literally Scrappy ABM. Can you just, I know you talked about that a little bit, but can you talk a little bit more about the difference between what Scrappy ABM is versus maybe the use of some of these six-figure platforms that so many businesses do build their ABM programs around?
Yeah. So like right now we're doing a podcast, and I don't know if you know how much a podcast costs. You do, but maybe audience, you don't. We're using Squadcast for recording, which is bundled in with Descript. Descript on their top plan is like $30 a month, and it's editing as well. You did outreach through LinkedIn or email, and you used a scheduling link that you could do through Calendly, or if you've got a HubSpot instance, like relatively inexpensive, you can use HubSpot Starter for $240 a year. So not crazy. That's what I'm on. The booking rate on a podcast is roughly 70-80%. Which means if you ask somebody, 4 out of 5 people will say yes to joining your show. So if you were to build a target account list of people that you're like, I'd love to have them know that we exist and to build a relationship and like forcibly have them have a conversation with me for an hour, build a podcast. And from a hard cost perspective, I just outlined it. It's about $57 a month, truly. Like Buzzsprout, Descript, and then like a Canva license. Because Buzzsprout's now like $12, Canva's about $20 a month. And then Descript 30 if you go on a premium plan. So like, my bad, it's gone up a little bit, inflation, $70 a month. But that's how Scrappy ABM did 3 million in sales in 18 months.
It was wow.
Podcast, invited people on, built a good relationship with our target accounts. And then just simple scripting at the end of, hey, like, I really love the fact that we're still on the same page. I'm sure you're super slammed all the time because you're the VP of marketing at this incredible tech company. But if you have any friends that like need help because they're not as talented as you, would you be willing to send them our way? And most of the time, people will either send referrals or they'll say, actually, I know how to do it. I'm just super slammed from a capacity perspective. Could you help us do it? Because I trust you now. That's an ABM program because I went after a specific target account. I created a distribution mechanism to actually engage them. There was a clear destination for where I wanted them to go. And there was clear tracking around it. So if you know who you're going after, why you're reaching out, what you're saying to them, where you're sending them to, and how you track it, that's a playbook. That's an ABM playbook that you can run over and over again. So the idea, I just gave an example, and I'll, for everybody that's listening in, the idea here is you don't need tooling and technology. Like, you need a really good strategy. And if you can answer the questions I just outlined, you have an ABM program. The question is just now, how do we want to execute that within our current capabilities? That's Scrappy ABM.
Should every business be running an ABM program, or is this something that businesses need to grow into and evolve into? Or are they already running ABM and they just don't call it ABM?
Such a great question. And no, not every business should be running ABM. I've actually started to talk a lot more about all the people that shouldn't be doing ABM because there's a lot of people that actually shouldn't.
Interesting.
So for starters, and this will be really telling, we built as Scrappy ABM, like our first target account list that's like a true, pure data-backed target account list about 6 weeks ago. Because when I look at it, what you want is established product market fit. It's like the way that I describe ABM is it's a B2B revenue strategy that aligns marketing, sales, and customer success around a set of target accounts that reflect our best fit customers. That's a long definition, but like it's really clear. I recently added the best fit customers component because what we saw are really early stage organizations that had not sold any customers that were building a target account list based on theory. And ABM is a really great way to go after a best fit audience or to validate who your audience should be because you focus all your time, energy, and effort on that audience. The challenge with that is most people don't like to expend a lot of money, time, energy, and effort to validate that an audience wasn't the right fit. So like you should focus on product market fit first, a dedicated sales team. So like, there's a lot of companies that do founder-led sales still that are like that 5-ish range, typically sometimes founder-led sales. Probably shouldn't be doing an ABM approach unless you're doing it through a podcast because podcast just checks a lot of boxes. Love podcasting.
Yeah.
Typically a more complex sales cycle that's at least 90 days or kind of the new qualification we've added to that is like 3 departments or more in level of involvement because that's pretty complex.
Interesting.
And then ideally an expansion motion that you can do post-sale. And the last component is just a clear market focus. So like we have some clients that are persona specific, and that's fine. But unless you can, based on historical data, say we work super well with the finance teams and these verticals, like these industries, I just get clear market focus. That's more than just like we help marketers, but it's like we help these kinds of marketers and these specific verticals, because you're just going to get a better program that's more specific. So those are the criteria that I typically look for when building out an ABM program.
So let's talk about you building your target list as well as the kind of target market, the last phase you were talking about there. I feel like that this used to be a, I remember this was one of the early projects of my career, and it was a very like laborious project to gather data across. It was a North American target account list. It was just really hard, which is why it was a big project. But I feel like now with all of the AI tools out there, you can do it more efficiently. I don't know, as effectively to be determined, but certainly more cost effectively. What's the process you recommend folks go through from both a kind of theory perspective in building their target account list? And then of the thousands of tools that we can use now to build that, do you have any that you recommend are being used most often right now, most effectively?
Yeah, this is not gonna be very content focused for the next 5 minutes. This is gonna be real nerdy.
That's fine, let's go, let's go.
Can I get some hate? Talk to your finance team. When we actually look at the idea of best customer, I can guarantee the best customer almost 9 times out of 10 is the most profitable customer. Like, just because when we look at it through from a profitability lens, let's even talk about in a services context, where do we as a services business spend the most time? It's typically unhappy clients that are like not liking our service. So like, I wouldn't qualify that as best. But like, where do we typically spend sometimes like the least amount of time is like the happiest clients, because they're good. Like, they're getting exactly what they thought. There's not all this like internal drama that we've got to go and fix. Like, I just looked at, and I hate to say it this way, but like, as a founder that now has a team of 15, who do I hear about the least?
Yeah.
Or when I do hear about them, it's in our Love Proof channel where they're like proof that they love us. Like, and then I look at our time tracked. It's awful to say, but like, we don't spend as much time on those clients because there's just not as much need to. Like, a lot of time on bad clients is spent internally discussing how we're going to overcome an objection or a challenge that they're experiencing. It's like, that's still time tracked towards that client. Whereas other clients, just doing the work, it's great. It's like, profit is super helpful to understand. And it's not just revenue, which is why I push back on this, because there's a lot of companies that I have worked in the past that sold really high dollar clients that they had never worked with previously. So they end up being really low profit. Now, to be super clear, that's not always a bad thing. That could be a strategic move of, we want to go after more clients like this. We need to do it once. We'll break even on this first client, but then we'll build out the processes and operationalize it. And then we can replicate that long term. That's great. That should be an ABM program, though. ABM is like best fit customers, which is highest profit. So I look at it through that lens from a finance perspective. Then I go to CS and I look at NPS surveys. And then also, if you have a product, like, who actually uses the product? Because then if you could look at product utilization data, you're like, oh, shoot, like, they're happy and they use it and they're profitable. We should probably go get more people like that. And then with sales, you're going to get a lot of the data and anecdata of who was actually involved in the decision committee. So you can actually build out your buying groups. And then marketing can give you market size. So I'll actually tell you, fun fact, our most profitable client is a one of one client that I will never be able to find another one of. And I mean that very sincerely. I might be able, but like, I just, they're a super weird client. What we do for them, everything is relatively custom, but we just know how to do it. And like, they're just a weird client. So even though they're our most profitable, from a market size perspective, there's not more like them. So what we want to do is go get more of our best customers. So that's the thought process, is like, start with finance, back it out to CS, back it out to sales, and then marketing should provide the validated market size of an audience like this. And then you go through that iteration a couple of times. And then final thought here, I recently learned this. Some people really hate BlackRock, and I don't have firm opinions one way or the other. I don't truly know enough to have an opinion. What I do know is they did $6.3 billion in profit last year, which is like, all right, so they're doing more than I am. Probably could learn a couple of things.
Yes.
And the standard PE playbook is identify, yes, it's layoffs. So there is that. Not a huge fan of that side. But the other component is identifying the top 20% of your customer base and then reorienting the business to go get more of those. So like, if you think about ABM is going to get the best customer, who's the top 20%? Like, how do we go get more of those? And like, that should be your ABM program.
It sounds so obvious when you say it out loud, like how collaborative that process is. But I think we as marketers, myself included, are sometimes we're guilty of saying, oh, we know the market, we're marketing, and like, we arbitrarily, or maybe we're just using marketing data to create that list. And I love working with finance. Like, I posted on LinkedIn about this a couple of weeks ago. Like, I just think finance, they've got probably a different perspective on the data and kind of a different lens that they're looking at the data through, as well as I think a lot of times they have access to data and different benchmarks and different data sources that you might not even know are available to you and your business. So I love starting there, and then obviously the collaborative process with everyone else involved. I think that's super, super smart and great advice.
I appreciate it.
You gave the podcast example. I know you've been talking about a lot about content-led outbound ABM programs. Is podcasting core to that? Are there other types of content you recommend, or is podcasting just the first step of that? Can you talk a little bit about the role content plays in these ABM programs?
So long and short, the whole thing for Scrappy is just start with what you got. So for me, I've been podcasting for 4 years at this point. Came down to like to start Scrappy ABM. I was like, I'm going to do a podcast. And then I've also been posting on social for 4 years at this point. So like, it's very easy for me to continue to do that. I have not written a blog for Scrappy. It's just not been a thing.
Wow.
There's a lot of other things that I haven't done. But for me, these are the easiest things that like were engaging for my audience. So when I thought about it from that perspective, I started there. And as you look at your own content program, you likely have a lot of content. Maybe. I don't know. But most people have a decent amount of content. Like they've got their website. They've got probably some blog content. They've got newsletters. They may have a couple videos here and there. So like when I think about doing a content-led outbound program, what I am seeing for many outbound teams is they just don't even know what content they have. It's not been well organized, and it's not purposeful in what is trying to be communicated from an outbound perspective. So what most outbound teams are doing right now is they look for a couple of assets on the website, maybe, and I mean that sincerely, like no shot at outbound teams, but like maybe. But more often than not, what they're doing is they're taking their list and they're just reaching out and saying, hey, I saw these couple of cool things about you on LinkedIn. It looks like you do some volunteering. Good job on keeping up with an instrument. I wish I had done that. By the way, do you want to buy our stuff? And that's about it. What I have found so far, and this, maybe I'm wrong. I'm happy to be wrong if someone can tell me another way of doing it. But what I have found is my buyers don't typically care that I know that they played guitar. They don't, typically. Sometimes they do, but most of the time they don't.
It's like a party trick almost. It's, oh, okay, you did your research, check that box. Like, I don't actually care.
Yeah, but what I found is they like it when I help them do their job better.
Yes.
So for my buyers, they want to not get fired and they want to make sure that they like can do their job. So what I do is a lot of educational content on like how to do the thing. Like, how do you do ABM? And like, what are the pitfalls to avoid? And that's pretty much it. Like, I just do a lot of that. But then when we map that content to where somebody is in their journey. So like, we do a lot of problem content, like a lot of problem content. It's probably 70% of what I create. It's just like, here, if you're thinking about doing ABM, like here are all the things you're going to experience. It's going to be hard. Avoid these things. And then like, hopefully by default, you get a little bit better. We spend probably 25% of our time dedicated to like exactly how to do this in like really tactical ways. Now, all of our content is relatively tactical, but like I'm doing a webinar next month that is exactly like step-by-step. How do you build out a closed loss program?
So good.
So that's 25% of our content. And then 5% is, hey, have you considered not doing it yourself and letting a team of experts do it? And that's about it. And honestly, that's our website. So if you go to our website, you will not find any helpful content. I'm so sorry. Like our website is just buy our stuff because our newsletter is nothing but helpful. Our podcast is nothing but helpful. Our socials are nothing but helpful. And all of our webinars are helpful. So like I educate everywhere else, but if you land on the site, it's Buy My Stuff website, and that's really it. That's just how I think about it. It's just like when you know where the buyer is in their journey, then when we go to an outbound team and say, hey, can you go outbound to these people? We are then aligning the reason we're reaching out with the information that we're sending them. And I say this a lot, like people aren't dumb. If you go to my website, in most standard websites, there's a book a call button at like the top right-hand corner. It's not like it's hidden.
Yeah.
Like it's actually really obvious exactly how to book a meeting. So what I want to do in my outbound is I want to help people make the decision with information that informs them on why they might want to book a meeting. If they've already been on the website, that's like use case content or like case study content or like how-to content. And then in your email signature, like most people do this already, but if you're not, like book a meeting with me here, like just the link. So it's always in the signature. But the main body, the main purpose of the email is education. It's information. It's supporting them do their job better today. If you do that a lot, they'll buy from you eventually, or they may not. And then tell all their friends about it. And like, that's cool.
There's several things I love about all this. One, I think kudos to you for the things you're not doing. Like, you're just doing what's natural to you from a podcasting perspective. Like, you're not blogging because you're supposed to be blogging or because it's because that's what marketers do, right? Like, you're doing what's natural to you, which is the podcast format, and you're making it work for you. I think so many times as marketers, we're just checking boxes. We're like, oh, we're supposed to do 2 blogs per week. I better go arbitrarily talk about something else that's vanilla and uninteresting to our audience. So I think that's awesome. I think the other thing you said about marketing the problem, I always say every hero needs a villain. And I think too many, this is something we fought a lot throughout the course of our business, is like, we love talking about the hero ourselves. I love that you even attach that 70% to the villain, like, or to the problem, like 70% of what you're doing is talking about the problem. I think that's so good. And then lastly, I'm not surprised by the success that you're having with this content because it's being useful. I always say, like, it's fun and sexy to talk about like the latest thought leadership. Like, what does AI mean for the future of account-based marketing? And that content actually doesn't get as engaged as much as something that is how to use AI to build your ABM program, yeah. Right? Thought leadership is very fun and very, maybe even easier to do than something that is useful and helpful. We see this is backed by data on our platform. In fact, we've got over 1 million resources inside our library, over 100,000 users using, engaging with that content. Templates and toolkits, things that people can download, edit, make copies of, put to work, be better at their job, like you're saying, it outperforms any other content format on our platform by a factor of 3.2. And that is the coaching we are giving our customers all the time, is give away what you know, make it useful. People are engaging with B2B content because they've got an acute problem they are trying to solve in real time, or they're trying to be better at their job. And that's it. And I think you nailed that. And I think, again, I'm not surprised that the content you're creating is resonating. So kudos to you there. I'm going to ask you 2 last questions here. One, I'm just curious. So Scrappy, you mentioned a lot of early stage businesses. We talked about tooling at the start of this. Does a business eventually outgrow Scrappy ABM, or does Scrappy ABM like grow into and complement some of the tooling and some of the more sophisticated technologies that are out there with ABM programs?
Yeah. So for everybody's context, I have a 19-month-old. So like I'm really in the throes of some things right now, but like my daughter did outgrow crawling. So like inevitably she learned to walk and then she got like way better at walking. And then like she's learning to run. So like, as I think about it, Scrappy ABM is like crawl stage account-based marketing. It's like, we've got to start somewhere. So like, how do we get movement happening? And it is largely imperfect. There's a bunch of stuff that's like busted and broken and duct taped because it's a Scrappy approach. But like, we learned how to move, and then we learned a more efficient way of moving, which is going from crawling to walking. And then once you've actually done some like really solid training, you can run. So for context, I'm not going to like pull this forward. I need to lose weight, and I suck at losing weight. I've tried for many years. I had a friend that was like, I signed up for a 5K and gave myself 3 months, and I didn't want to look like an idiot at a 5K. And if you run a 5K, everyone and their mother's, oh, what was your time? And I was like, I want to say a cool time. So then he started training for a 5K, and he did his first 5K in like under 30 minutes in like 3 months of training. And then it was like, cool. So like, I signed up for a 5K. So I have a 5K in like 5 weeks. So like, I'm having to train so I don't look like an idiot, and like, I can actually do it. And the other thing is I signed up for a 10K 8 weeks after my 5K. So I have to keep getting better because I created specific deadlines and goals. So that's how you pull this forward.
We all love a good forcing function.
You're telling me, man. So yes, I do think everyone should outgrow Scrappy ABM inevitably. Like, because I don't want to be Scrappy forever. Like, I'd like to have some money, like to invest in these really helpful tools. Like, that they are helpful in the right order. It's just not starting. Like, you got to learn to crawl. Nobody likes to crawl because crawling sucks. But we can't walk if you don't know how to crawl. Man, I just like mixed two analogies. Well, but we got there.
No, I love it. And the famous the reruns I watch in my house, which is probably unhealthy, Shark Tank is always on. And Mark Cuban always says you got to crawl before you ball. So I like that analogy as well. But I love the order of operations there. I think that's so right. Like, people are like, oh, we need ABM. And they go and they buy the Ferrari first, right? And it's, no, you need to learn how to be a student driver. Then you need to get the used car and then the scrappy, like, new car. So I love that analogy. All right, Mason, this is the last question we ask all of our guests. What's an unpopular opinion that you have as it pertains to B2B marketing?
Don't ask for the meeting. Again, people aren't dumb.
Do you ever ask for the meeting?
I lightly seed it. So like, for example, we were at B2BMX a couple weeks back, and I offered people like this free template. And by the way, if you want it, just shoot me a message. I'm happy to give it away for free. But then people actually used the template. They built out a program, and I said, hey, if you want to review it with us, we're happy to review it with you. And I had people take me up on it, which was awesome. I hopped on a call this morning, and she was like, I'm just really struggling with all this content that we need to create. I was like, I hear you. Side note, we are a business that helps people like you. So if there's a budget and like this is a priority and this needs to get done, you just yourself said you're trying to get as much as you can. And it's not a matter of not knowing how to do it. It is truly time. It's like people buy from us because they need more time or they don't know how to do it. And like you've invested all the resources. So if that makes sense, awesome. Let's talk about it. If it doesn't, that's okay. Like I'm happy to be helpful. And she was like, I literally have no money. And I was like, that's cool. No worries. So like that is, for me, the closest I get to asking for the meeting. So I view that as, I'm a pretty generous brand. At least I try to be. So I do think people sometimes forget like, oh yeah, like, but our clients that Mason has that like work with him.
We can help you, but also capitalism.
Yeah, there's a certain point where, and the way that I explain it is like, I will do everything but put my hands on a keyboard. That's what you gotta pay me for.
Yeah.
So if you want us to put our hands on a keyboard, I'm right there, let's do it. But like before that, I'm happy to do anything I can to help you. So I try to think of everything through the lens of ethical selling. So at a certain point I have an obligation because I know what I offer is going to be exponentially helpful for them and make their life better. Like they will get more value from me than they will pay me. And as a result, I have an ethical obligation to help them through selling them. So that comes from a deep level of knowing the customer and like their current unique state. So like that lady, for context, attended a 3-hour workshop, came to another session the next day, has followed me on social and has commented on all of my stuff, booked a one-on-one time to review her template and ask me for more help. And then at the end of the call, after all of that, I said, based on your current challenges, you don't have the time to do it. If there's a budget, I would love to help you do this. If there's not, I can't do it for free, but like, I'd love to help you. Like people just don't think about it from that perspective. So that's hopefully the helpful lens shift of how deeply I try to help people before I ask for their money, because I have that level of conviction. Like I know we're actually going to generate you a return. That's the other thing. So don't tell people you can't actually help. Crazy.
That's so good. It reminds me of, I feel like part of becoming a trusted advisor is like the best like selling motion, right? And that's exactly what you're doing throughout that entire process. So that's really good. Mason, if people want to learn more from you or learn more about Scrappy ABM, what's the best way to do that?
I took the Spaceballs approach. So if you Google Scrappy ABM, everything is just the same thing. So like the podcast, the newsletter, the website, the LinkedIn. There is a merch store that we're about to stand up. So there is like swag that you can go and buy if you want. So yeah, just Google Scrappy ABM if you just Google those two terms put together.
Love it. Mason, thank you so much for joining us today. I learned a lot. I'm excited our watchers and listeners, I'm sure, learned a lot as well. Until next time, same place. Cheers.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.